welcome to the New Year's edition of the ChicagoFootball.com Bears podcast. I am Kevin Fishbane, joined by my co-host Arthur Arkish, executive producer Dan Mott, associate producer John Solly. Everybody back and well rested from a little Christmas break. And we are recording this on December 29th, 1 year to the day the Bears fired Phil Emery, Mark Trestman, 2 years to the day the Packers beat the Bears to win the NFC North. And on this day, the Bears did absolutely nothing. So a very boring day, which we welcome. And we'll recap a Bears victory, ending a three-game losing streak, and preview the final game of the 2015 season. Hub Arkish will join us later in the show to talk about, we're going to recap the calendar year and talk about some of the biggest Bears stories of 2015. We will preview Bears-Lions with Josh Katzenstein of the Detroit News. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at Bears_Insider. I am at K Fishbane. He is at Arthur Arkish. And Arthur, it was Lovey Bowl Part 2, and the Bears played Lovey Ball to beat Lovey Smith. What'd you think of that?
Well, first of all, that was some beautiful introing there to kind of set the stage for this recap. And it's funny, I didn't really... I guess I had thought about it, but I think Lovey Bowl 2 was quite a bit like Lovey Bowl 1, same formula, which, as you mentioned, was obviously the takeaways and running the football. So kind of interesting. I'm sure that makes it a little bit more sour for Lovey that not only is he 0-2 against his former team, but they've absolutely flipped the script on him twice, you know, despite not really being a good football team. Really, they've been two bad teams both times.
And it was cool to see some of the undrafted rookies be the ones that finally turned the Bears into the takeaway machine that they've wanted to be, that they were under Lovey. And on the offensive side of the ball, Jay Cutler just continues to be efficient. I mean, you just sit there, and the patience that he's had this year, we haven't seen that before. It's a credit to him. It's a credit to Adam Gase. You tweeted it about how of quarterbacks who have started at least 10 games, Cutler is the only one who has yet to throw more than one interception in a game. And heading into this year, he never had a streak like that for more than seven games in a row. So that, you know, it was very Bears like the way Bears have won games this year. It's been that meticulous offense and then just doing enough on defense to get the W.
Yeah, it speaks to the improved consistency, certainly, of Jay Cutler. It speaks to Adam Gase's ability to adapt game plans for, you know, game-specific opponents and, you know, the 46 guys he's going to have up. Obviously, not having Alshon had a huge influence on the game plan. And, you know, it's funny. Cutler's numbers didn't look great from that game, but I thought he was outstanding. Cutler's numbers looked really good against Washington a couple weeks ago. He wasn't quite as great. So it does kind of tell you sometimes you have to dig a little bit deeper to kind of, you know, assess a performance a little bit more.
And I know that you and Pat Finley wrote about this in Take 2, which folks can see in Thursday, Sun Times and Daily Herald, Northwest Herald, and many other papers around Illinois. As cool as it was on the defensive side to see a John Timu, a Harold Jones, Corte, Jonathan Anderson step up, the reality is that there's a very legitimate chance that next year, week one, none of those three guys are even on the roster. You know, I think it'd be cool if one of those became a diamond in the rough guy that maybe won a starting job or at least a top backup role. But at this point in the season, it's guys like that at the bottom of the roster that get these opportunities, and they know that they are auditioning not only for Ryan Pace, but they're putting tape together for the other 31 teams around the league in case they get cut at some point.
Yeah, no doubt about it, and it can't hurt their opportunity, hurt their sort of chances or exposure to the front office and the coaching staff to try and carve out a role on this team. So while there's no guarantees, it's nice to see the Bears willing to see what else they have. I like Chris Brzezinski. I think he's been a really, really good addition to the Bears locker room and a good addition to the special teams. But we know what he is at this point. He's, you know, in his late 20s, and he's bounced around the league. And what he is a really good special teamer who can at times take advantage of a bigger opportunity. But you got to see what you have in bigger upside players. I don't think there's any doubt that's what the Bears are doing when they're looking at guys like Jones Cordy and John Timu.
Let's go ahead and recap this a little closer, analyze it the way that we do. Really, we are the best in the business at analyzing these games in a quick, clean, awesome fashion in the three and out.
I'm going to give you to the count of three.
Then shalt thou count to three.
I'm going to count to three.
One, two, five.
Lisa, three.
Three.
by the way, hearing Hans Gruber's I'm going to give you the count of three. I watched Die Hard on Christmas night, following up our conversation from last week. And I'm going to go on a tangent here. It was great, fun to watch with the family. My sister was the one who suggested it. She actually turned off It's a Wonderful Life, which is another classic we watch every year, to go to Die Hard. My mom had never seen Die Hard, and she kept saying, well, where's the plane? Isn't there a plane involved? I think she was thinking of Die Hard 2 or maybe another movie involving a plane. Then she couldn't get over the fact that Bruce Willis didn't put his shoes back on. and she noticed that his shirt color changed. It was a mistake in the movie. Very confused keeping up with all the bad guys. It still was an enjoyable experience, but my mother was a little too preoccupied with her crossword puzzle to fully enjoy Die Hard the way that the four of us obviously do. Okay. The reason we're here, of course. Sorry. The three and out. Arthur, your one positive from Sunday's win.
Yeah, you know, we talked about him a little bit already, but I'm going to continue going on about Harold Jones-Quarty. I thought it was cool how he, you know, had his first opportunity to get back in the lineup, and I thought had the most impactful game by a safety so far this season. It's a position that has been improved for the Bears but had been lacking. The whole secondary, you can say that for, had been lacking the type of impact, game-changing plays, and obviously he comes up with a couple of them. And just really happy for the kid. He's worked hard and kind of took his demotion well for Chris Brzezinski, and now it's nice to see him taking advantage when he has another chance.
It was kind of funny after the game to hear him say he's excited to see Calvin Johnson next week. I have an idea of what Calvin Johnson would say if someone asked him about facing Harold Jones-Quarty. It would say, who?
Yeah, exactly.
My positive on go ahead.
As we say, hopefully Calvin Johnson doesn't catch wind of that, because I don't think they need any bulletin board material. Tough enough game coming up Sunday.
Yeah, no offense to HJQ, but the Division II guy who's started three games is not going to provide much bulletin board material for Calvin Johnson. Not that, of course, as you said, not that they need it. My positive offensive line play. I thought they were fantastic in run blocking. Kyle Long, Vlad Dukas, who surprisingly started over Patrick Omame. Matt Slauson was great. Even Charles Leno, who's better in pass pro than run blocking, looked good. And then I thought they did a great job on the edge. I mean, Long and Leno really held down the one sack. I believe was Dukas missed his block on Gerald McCoy, but otherwise, great work by an offensive line that had its worst game of the season against Minnesota. It's credit to them. Of course, credit to Dave Magazine and Adam Gase for that. Arthur, what was your negative from Sunday?
Yeah, we haven't talked about him a ton, and I kind of feel bad doing this. I found out after the fact, or I read that he was under the weather as well. I know he's been battling through injuries, but you know, the Bears paid Eddie Royal $10 million just to be dependable. They weren't looking for explosiveness or really a game breaker, just to be dependable. So to see him drop the sure touchdown right before halftime, to see 21 yards on five catches, 4.2 average, that's not very exciting. Really, Mark Mariani has done Eddie Royal's job better than he has, and he's getting the veterans minimum this year.
Boy, did Eddie Royal look good in July and June. And I told everybody, you know, they asked me for fantasy tips, and I hate fantasy football, as I might talk about later in the show if I can get through it. But I had the worst beat of possible in the championship last week. But I told everyone that Eddie Royal would be a fantasy stud this year. And you're right, the injuries have been an issue for him, and they just haven't been able to work that out. My negative, you know, it's funny, when I was doing the three and out that I write and the three things that didn't work, it was kind of hard to find three. I'll talk about the punt block, because this poor special teams unit, its best game was against Minnesota, which was the overall team's worst game of the season. And it can't go; it just can't get out of its own way. Leroy Reynolds, just a mistake, and Jeremiah George gets through a free range to block Pat O'Donnell's punt. First punt block punt of the season for the Bears, and the Bucs score on the next play. So it's just, you know, they have a great game on defense, nice game on offense, they end the losing streak, and of course special teams has to do something wrong. I will say, though, Robbie Gould made four field goals. So for all the Robbie Gould haters out there, including another 50-yard field goal, he's got a career high this season.
And another tease in our Thursday insert, excuse me, Kevin, is read Adam Johns' read options, because there's a few little tidbits in there. I didn't realize just how good of a season, just how big of a rebound Robbie Gould has had, but he's put together one of his best seasons ever, one of the best seasons by any kicker in the NFL this year. So really nice to see him respond. I know he takes a lot of heat for a couple big misses.
Yeah, it's one of those jobs that you're paid to do one job. You know, he couldn't afford to miss a 36-yard field goal to win the game at home against San Francisco. You know, he that was bad. But then, yeah, you go back and you look at all the reasons that he kept the Bears in games, or was a big part of the reason they won a game. That's life as a kicker. Exactly. All right. What was your moment that mattered?
Yeah, you know, I was going to just talk about kind of the youth movement and kind of cop out and just say seeing Jones Quartey out on the field to start the game, but I think we've done a good job of relaying how we feel about that. So there were two big-time third-and-long conversions by Jay Cutler in the fourth quarter. The second one was even bigger, the 25-yard gain to Mariani, but they already had a two-score lead at that point. So I'll just go to the simple third-and-seven scramble. We've seen Cutler do it so many times this year just to move the sticks. It's a six-point game at that point, and to kind of flip the field or actually set up a field goal in a two-possession game. I thought that was huge, and more continued savvy of how Cutler's been able to recognize what's around him and take advantage of his athleticism.
And that threat of using his legs helped him in the 25-yard throw to Mark Mariani on the third down in the next drive, because he forced the linebacker to kind of, you know, take him honestly and think that he might actually run, which opened up the passing lane for Mariani. Mine's got to be the phantom face mask call. I mean, it might have actually been a face mask, but I call it phantom because the referees did not announce who it was on. This is the play where Jay Cutler had seemed to throw another terrible pick on a screen pass. The Buccaneers, already up 7-0, seemed destined to score again, and it got called back on a face mask away from the play. It took about a quarter before we finally found out who was on. The Buccaneers were telling us one person. The Bears were telling us another person. On TV, they didn't show a replay for a few plays. I don't think, Garth, that you were watching it at home, so you had a better view of that. But it was a weird play, but I think the game turned right there because the Bears ended up going down and scoring a touchdown.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That was, I had a feeling you'd go with that one, and I don't think there's any doubt it's one of those ones that doesn't really show up, or you don't realize kind of the magnitude of it when you're just looking in the stat book afterwards, but completely flipped the game around, and it was about time because the Bears have had some bad breaks too this year, and it's good to see that even out a little bit for them.
All right, we're done with Lovie Smith. We've moved on from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We are on to the final game of the 2015 season. It will actually take place in the calendar year 2016 when the Bears host the Lions on Sunday. And Arthur, here's what's at stake. Who's going to get third place in the NFC North? Who's going to get last place? And there's a draft pick in order. And before we call out to Josh Katzenstein to talk about this game a little bit more, I want your take on this idea of fans. There are a lot of fans out there that probably want the Bears to lose because they want the better draft pick. And maybe my view is skewed because I understand how these players think and work from covering this game for a while. Is like that idea doesn't even go through their heads. And maybe the organization would not be that upset with the loss because they know it means a better draft pick. But these guys are all going to go out there and play their butts off because, as we talked about earlier, it's a job interview. I mean, they don't know. There's only 16 games. It's not like the NBA or baseball where you can really find a way to play a lot of young players. I mean, these guys don't get many opportunities. And I understand why the fans want it, but it just doesn't happen. And really, the difference between who you're going to get at pick 11 or 12 versus the guy you're going to get at pick 16 or 17 is not going to make that much of a difference in this year's draft. Where do you stand on this?
Well, I thought you said it quite well, actually. I had a couple points in there that I would have said verbatim. A, this isn't the NBA, and this isn't Philadelphia, so that kind of stuff doesn't happen. These players absolutely aren't wired that way, and the coaches to a lesser extent. No, really, I think you put it well. Maybe the ownership, maybe Ryan Pace at the end of the day isn't terribly distraught if they drop it on Sunday, but they're never going to, you know, there will never be an earnest attempt to lose a game when there's only so few opportunities, and especially this one. You could call it meaningless, call it just for third place. I think it's incredibly important that the Bears win at home Sunday and that they earn a second division win. I think it'll be another tangible sign of progress that until now we really don't have.
Arthur tweeted this, that the Bears, last time they only won one home game in a season, 1973. So this will be the home finale for the Bears at Soldier Field. And when you talk about the draft order, it's very difficult to discuss until the season actually ends because strength of schedule becomes one of the tiebreakers. And the Bears, the schedule the Bears played was pretty good. So their strength and schedule is up there. So among the 6-10 or 7-9 teams, they're probably going to have the lowest pick. So that's going to be up for grabs. And I know something I'm going to talk about with Josh Katzenstein, who joins us now from the Detroit News, is Josh, we're going to be keeping another eye on the New Orleans Saints and Tampa Bay Buccaneers because whatever place the Bears and Lions get, they're going to go, at least the Bears are traveling to go play that team in the NFC South. I think a lot of the Bears beat writers would like a trip to New Orleans.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I just had one a couple weeks ago. Thanks for having me on. And I haven't double checked the Lions schedule if they play the NFC South team at home or on the road, but obviously I think most people would agree that New Orleans is a better weekend town than Tampa Bay.
Josh Gatzenstein of the Detroit News covers the Lions. He's a friend of the program. He's one of, I think, our third guest now to make a multiple appearance on the Chicago Football Podcast. Of course, follow him on Twitter at jkatzenstein. And, Josh, before we talk about Bears-Lions, got to congratulate you and your Golden Gophers. Big bowl victory for Jerry Kill in his final game there. And you got to go see it because it was in Detroit.
Yeah, no, it was a lot of fun. But I think we give this win to Tracy Clays. It's officially the Tracy Clays era. The Gophers are moving forward beyond Jerry Kill now. So yeah, between getting to see that win and coming on this podcast for the second time, it's been quite a week already.
So let's. I know Arthur's got better Lions questions than I do because the only time I watched the Lions in the last 6 weeks, I'll be honest, was Lions Saints because I was just praying that Brandon Cooks was going to stop catching passes because of fantasy football implications. But here I am being bitter again. But it looks like, from the looks of things, this whole Jim Bob Cooter, new offense, Matthew Stafford, they've been rolling the past few weeks. What is it that's really gotten them back on track?
Well, I think a key to the recent success has definitely been the offensive line play, and one big reason for the turnaround in the second half has been Michael Ola playing right tackle, a guy that you guys, I'm sure, know well after he spent some time in Chicago. But, I mean, he's played significantly better than either Adrian Waddle, who's now on the Patriots, or Cornelius Lucas had played at right tackle. And I think between getting him in the lineup and then having a new offensive line coach in addition to a new offensive coordinator, they shifted Ron Prince from tight ends coach to offensive line coach. And a lot of the players have said that they've just simplified the blocking scheme. Looks like they're doing a lot less zone blocking. So I think, that has definitely been a big reason why, you know, the running game has improved significantly, and that, you know, Matthew Stafford has had a lot more time in the pocket to find his receivers. And so beyond that, I think, you know, it's mostly just Stafford is playing a lot better. He's making better decisions. He's got a 16-2 touchdown to interception ratio the second half of the year. And it seems like a big reason why is that Jim Bob Cooter's offense really fits his skill set. You know, even if they haven't really changed a ton in the offense, I mean, they're still doing some of the same things with, like, substitutions, and they're not really throwing the ball deep down the field. But Stafford talks a lot about how comfortable he is with Cooter, both as a play caller and as a coach. I mean, they're really only a few years apart in age, and I think, you know, a lot of the players relate better to Cooter. They understand what he wants from them, and I think it's proving to be a much better offense for the guys that they have.
Josh, I have to laugh. I was kind of curious throughout the offseason what the Bears staff didn't like about Michael Ola. He was actually quite versatile and quite valuable for the Bears last year, in addition to being an awesome guy in the locker room. I'm sure you've had a chance to talk to him, and he's such a nice guy. But it's good to see him having success. And what about Jim Bob Cooter? You said they've simplified things. You said that Matt Stafford feels more comfortable. I mean, I think it's probably still a little too soon. Everyone's so excited about Adam Gase here and his head coaching opportunities. I think that's probably a little bit down the road for Jim Bob Cooter. But have you seen situations where he has a chance to remain, assuming Jim Caldwell isn't? Do you think he's done enough to have that tag removed, the interim tag, that is?
I'm not sure yet. Well, I mean, he actually isn't being referred to as an interim offensive coordinator. He's the offensive coordinator until further notice, basically. So I don't know. I mean, the Lions president Rod Wood said the other day, and he sort of reaffirmed what he had said previously, that the next GM will make a decision on Jim Caldwell's future, and I imagine that GM will make a decision about, you know, some of the assistant coaches too, because, you know, what if Terrell Austin doesn't get a head coaching job, I'm sure whoever is coaching the Lions next year would like to have him back. Jim Bob Cooter, obviously, you know, he was a hot candidate a little bit last offseason with the Bears wanting to bring him in, you know, when John Fox arrived. So I would imagine that he hasn't done anything to dim his star, you know, these past 2 months with the Lions. So I think, yeah, there's definitely a chance that the Lions, you know, whoever is the head coach, you know, could retain at least one of their coordinators. And Cooter obviously would be easier because I don't think he'll be up for any head coaching jobs. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's just, you know, in listening to Stafford, one thing that he said after the game Sunday, he was bemoaning a missed throw. It was more of a drop by Calvin Johnson, I suppose, because he said that was the play that he wanted to run. And it sort of sounds like, you know, the players just have a lot more input in the offense, which really is the way that it should be. I mean, you want them to feel comfortable and confident in the plays they're running. So if, you know, the quarterback is having more input, obviously, you know, he's going to feel better about what he's doing. And I think that's been the case for Stafford the last 2 months.
Josh, you are about to embark on, you got a head start on what Arthur and I dealt with a little bit last year with this potential house cleaning going on there. You know, obviously they already made the move with GM and you talked about the assistants. So what do you think is coming in the next week or two? Obviously very unique ownership situation, Detroit. Ernie Corsi, we know he helped out with Chicago. He's involved there now. A lot's going to happen in the next few weeks, but how do you think it's going to affect Jim Caldwell? What do you think their strategy is going to be from what you've gleaned over the past few weeks?
I don't know how it's going to affect Jim Caldwell, honestly. I mean, I would imagine that most GMs want to bring in their own guy, and I don't know that, you know, most of the candidates the Lions would be looking at would have ties to Jim Caldwell, because I mean, he's really only been involved with a few organizations, and one of them, Baltimore, it sounded like he was, you know, sort of on the way out before he got the job with the Lions last year. So I don't know. It's really hard to project, you know, just what his future is going to be, because I think some people can look and see, you know, the roster they had last year was so good that, you know, most coaches probably could have gotten them to the playoffs like he did. And then, you know, there have been some errors this year similar to, you know, what he struggled with in Indy. But, you know, a lot of the players trust him, but a lot of those players won't necessarily be on the team next year. So I think, you know, it's going to be a tough decision for whoever that GM is. But I think the Lions want to get a GM in place as soon as possible. But as you guys know, you can't interview them until their season's done. So if they're looking at teams that are, you know, on their way to the Super Bowl, it might take a little bit longer. But obviously, you know, it would be in their best interest to make that decision sooner so that they know whether or not they need to look for a head coach.
Josh, what have been your impressions of Rod Wood? I can't look at his name and not think about the Rolling Stones. So, A, is he a Rolling Stones fan? And B, I know you've had a couple opportunities to chat with him now. I think he had sort of a bizarre introductory press conference. At least one of or two of his quotes, I think, were maybe interpreted kind of differently than he had anticipated. But what has been your impression of him?
Yeah, I don't know if he's a Rolling Stones fan. I know that he is a Matthew Stafford fan because he is. Well, he grew up a Lions fan, lifelong Lions fan, and he has Stafford on his fantasy team. So I suppose, you know, he probably had a rough start to the year, but if his team stayed afloat, he's probably having a nice little playoff run. But no, it's, yeah, I think the quotes that you're referring to, I think some people just, they didn't necessarily take the wrong way because, I mean, he meant exactly what he said. But, I mean, the biggest one was that, you know, he's probably not qualified to run any other NFL team except the Lions. But I mean, that's not him saying, oh, because the Lions are this awful team. It's because his relationship with the Ford family is the only reason that he was ever in position to work for an NFL team. Yeah, I'm sure there are lots of people that are connected to all sorts of NFL ownership families that have gotten jobs that they might not have otherwise been qualified for. So I don't think that's the end of the world. I think the biggest key for the Lions is that Rod Wood runs the business side of things and lets the GM handle the football side of things, because he doesn't have any personnel experience. He doesn't have any football experience. So you have to let the football people make the football decisions. And I think that was sort of a problem the Lions ran into, you know, with the last regime, because Tom LaLonde would sort of dip his toes into the football stuff a little bit too much and negotiate contracts and things like that. And if you're involved in the salary cap, that's just like, you know, making decisions about which players are going to be playing where. So I think as long as, you know, they keep the two, you know, bosses separate, it shouldn't be an issue. But yeah, no, I mean, Rod, you know, seems like obviously an honest guy, which, you know, as you know, there are very few of those. So he's been endearing to me so far, but I don't think anyone cares about that. I think people just want to see the Lions win.
Don't worry, Josh. We care about that. We care about you.
Here at the I appreciate that.
Chicago Football Podcast, joined by Josh Katzenstein of the Detroit News, covers the Lions. And Josh, when we talked to you 10 weeks ago, we were talking about a Lions team that had not won yet, that was maybe quitting on Jim Caldwell, and obviously no playoffs for the Lions. And you can look back, that of course, at Hail Mary against Green Bay. But it seems, at least by the record of the way they've been playing, that that effort hasn't been an issue. What do you expect from them in that realm? It's always a question mark how these guys handle the last game of the season, but it seems like they have gotten a little fire back in them, and maybe it's the moves that they made, but what kind of effort do you expect on Sunday at Soldier Field?
No, I'm sure they'll give 100% effort. I mean, effort, even in the two losses, like, I mean, they should have beaten the Packers if it wasn't for the questionable face mask followed by the, you know, Hail Mary, which really was more of a coaching error than anything else, because they had a couple guys just standing at the 50, one of whom was Ziggy Ansah, who you'd think he's 6'5", almost 6'6". Like, you'd rather have him either rushing the pass or standing, you know, on the goal line just trying to bat it down, which is what Calvin Johnson normally does, but he wasn't in there either. So all sorts of issues there. And then against St. Louis, they just ran into a team that beat them on both sides in the trenches, and that's obviously a recipe for disaster. So I expect them to give a full go. And a big reason why is because there are just so many players whose futures are in doubt, not just because of the GM coming in, but just because of contract issues. Like, Steven Tulloch, I think, is on the books for more than $7 million next year. Obviously, he can't do anything in one game that's going to, you know, convince somebody to keep him at that price. But I think, you know, he, you know, James Ahedibo, Joique Bell, Jason Jones, there's a lot of guys that, you know, have to sort of – I guess Ahedibo doesn't really fit because he'll be a free agent. But the other guys, I mean, they're really just trying to prove themselves, trying to convince the next GM that they're, you know, they're worthy of the deals they're on and that they should stay in Detroit. So I expect everyone to give a full effort. And obviously they don't like the Bears. They've had a lot of success against the Bears in recent years, and I think they'd like to keep that streak up too. So I wouldn't expect any fall off, but I guess it's impossible to predict.
Josh, we talked a little bit about the offense, Matt Stafford's improvement under Jim Bob Cooter and kind of the offensive line. Not as much discussion about the defense, but they've, for the most part, really responded well, particularly defending the run. One or two things that you've noticed that Terrell Austin's been able to do that's contributed to that?
Well, one is just the increased use of Issa Abdul-Kaddous as the safety in place of James Ahedibo. With Abdul-Kaddous and Quinn, the Lions have, you know, one of the faster safety tandems in the league, and I think a lot of people probably don't know much about Abdul-Kaddous, but I was looking at it today. The Lions are 6-1 when he starts. Now, we can't use quarterback wins as a you know, meaningful stat, so I don't think we're going to start using safety wins as a meaningful stat, but, I mean, that extra dose of speed, and he's solid in coverage, not amazing, but better than Ahedibo. I think that's, you know, definitely helped them limit the production of tight ends over the past couple months. And oddly enough, the game they lost to the Rams was the one where Ahedibo came back into the starting lineup. But then once he was back, they won the last two games. So I think that's definitely helped. Just being more and more creative with Ziggy Ansah has helped. I mean, he sort of just runs around the line at all times and, you know, could rush from any different angles. And then Devin Taylor, too, I think he's given the Lions some pass rushing punch, too. So between that and then Tahir Whitehead playing more, I think those have really been the only, you know, differences with the personnel on defense. I think the guys are just playing better. You know, they've gotten a little more comfortable. There were obviously, just like the offensive line had new faces, the defensive line had new faces, and everyone had to adjust to all the new tackles. So I think, you know, once they did that, they've definitely proven that they're capable of shutting down the run, which is their first priority. And really the only two teams that had success running were the Rams, who they lost to, and then the 49ers in the first half on Sunday. But then the 49ers only ran the ball three times in the second half. So the Lions really just had their way with them.
All right, Josh, I'll wrap up here and put you on the spot with a little game prediction. And if I recall correctly, your first year on the beat was 2013, correct?
2012, actually.
Oh, 2012. Okay. So, because I got on the Bears being 2013, so I've never actually covered a Bears win over the Lions, because as we've talked about, the Lions have won five straight, which is kind of a unique stat in the series, the way the Lions have been over the last 20, 25 years. But do you have a pick for Sunday?
I haven't made one yet, but I think the Lions will probably win. It should be a close game. I think these two teams are actually pretty evenly matched, as we saw in the Week 6 game, and both teams could definitely put up some points. So I'll say like 27-24, sort of a lame pick, but I'll pick the Lions just because I think their defense is playing better right now, and Stafford is really on another level, and I don't think the Bears have the secondary to contain their weapons.
Well, we'll tell our listeners to follow you on Twitter during the week at Jay Katzenstein to see if you have a less lame pick as the week goes along.
Sounds good.
Give you that option. All right, Josh Katzenstein of the Detroit News breaking down Bears lines of this. Josh, thanks so much, and we'll see you on Sunday.
Yep, thanks for having me, guys.
All right, so Arthur, you know, as we talked about with Josh, talk about another team, the NFC North, that's going to potentially have a lot of new faces next year. But, you know, they have the quarterback, they have the receiver, they have some pieces on defense. So, I mean, you cover the Lions in your coverage of the NFC North for USA Today. We've dealt with these GM, and they keep the head coach, they don't keep the head coach, but kind of a unique situation for Detroit and the Ford family to figure out the next few months.
Yeah, for Jim Caldwell to have a chance to go 6-2 in the second half is will really be an impressive feat. And still in the end, I don't think it's going to make a difference, because I think that a formula in which you do get a new general manager and inherit the head coach never works. It rarely works. We saw it not work here, and there's been countless other instances of that. So I do think that they wipe the slate clean. But like you alluded to, I also think having a starting point with guys like especially Matthew Stafford, but Ziggy Ansah and Darius Slay. We'll see what they do with Calvin Johnson. Amir Abdullah's got an exciting future. So there are certainly some nice pieces to build around here for whoever will be, you know, the new guy in charge in the next few weeks.
Let's step away from the Lions game and let's look back at the year that was 2015. You know, it all began really with the hiring of Ryan Pace, and here we are wrapping up the season. And Arthur, we did a top 10, you know, most, we labeled it most important, most significant stories, you know, the ones that we followed the most, the ones that really sent the most ripple effects through the franchise, good and bad, during the year. And, you know, from us talking amongst each other and hearing from the fans, it's hard to say any in news or moment was more important than the hiring of both Ryan Pace and John Fox. I think for different reasons. I think and interesting reasons. You hire Ryan Pace, this young, fresh mind who no one really knows, and who has really put his stamp on this team. And then you do something that the franchise, no one in the franchise has ever done, in hiring a head coach with a pedigree like John Fox and the coordinators he brought in. We talked about Gase and Fangio being one of the top stories of the year. I think you can really connect everything that happened, good and bad, but mainly a lot of the good, and the reason this team's heading the right direction, to that moment when they decided to hire Ryan Pace, and then obviously the next week when John Fox came in.
Absolutely, and I think you did a good job of laying out that it's for two very different reasons. With Ryan Pace, they needed something fresh. They were reportedly very, very close to hiring Chris Ballard, and I know Ballard's going to be a future GM in this league, but he had too much background. He had too much experience with what had been going on already at Hallis Hall, and I thought to wipe the slate clean was the right move, and then obviously the coaching, just kind of the fortuitous way that the coaching search unfolded. It wasn't even a search. I mean, they did their due diligence, but once John Fox became available, it was pretty obvious what was going to happen. And then to get arguably the two best coordinators in football are certainly at the top of the list. Just a super rare thing to have happen the way it unfolded for Pace and the Bears.
I mentioned, I think, I don't remember where we ranked it. Of course, you can see the whole list in the Sun-Times, Daily Herald, and Northwest Herald in your Thursday paper. But, you know, the hiring of Gase and Fangio was very important for this team. But Arthur, how many times did we write a story about Kevin White and Alshon Jeffrey this year? I mean, from the day they drafted White, you know, all the excitement, and then he mysteriously misses minicamp, and then, of course, the surgery announcement. Then he comes back in practice, people get excited, and then they shut him down for the year. I mean, the will-he-won't-he situation with Kevin White, that was kind of further complicated by the way the Bears were, you know, the way they handled it with the media. And then Alshon Jeffrey's injury history, you know, missing six games already, four different injury situations in a contract year. I mean, you know, you go through our website, you just type in Kevin White, Alshon Jeffrey, you're going to get a lot of hits. Those two wide receivers, you know, we expected them to be on the field together. We expected them to, you know, make a lot of noise for this offense. But I think when you look back at the top stories of the year, those two separate stories, I think I put Kevin White number two because of, you know, you talk about him being the future and they drafted him. And then, of course, Alshon Jeffrey, the best player, best weapon on your offense. I mean, in terms of specific players on the team, I don't think any player garnered as much news as those two did.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, the injuries completely changed the game plan for this offense this season, and limited what they could do. Actually, in some ways, may have even improved the stock of Pace and Gase and Cutler and the way they were able to adapt. And of course, when your top pick doesn't play his whole rookie season, it almost increases the onus on the rest of the rookie class, which fortunately Pace got great contributions from. So we're not kind of frowning on that. And then with Alshon, again, for a completely separate reason, we'll see what happens at the bargaining table this offseason. I think it is now too risky to give him a long-term deal personally. I don't have any inside knowledge on what the Bears are thinking, but to miss those games obviously not only reshaped the offense, but reshaped his negotiations and financial future, frankly.
Yeah, we won't rehash two other stories that were on the top 10 list, which is, of course, Ray McDonald and Jeremiah Ratliff, probably the two most negative stories for this franchise the entire year. But those weeks that those things occurred, whether it was the McDonald signing, his release, the Jeremiah Ratliff release, a lot of news and a lot of real negative flack to the franchise. Looking in season, Arthur, it was funny when we were talking about big moments. There weren't many games that really resonated as, oh my gosh, you look back at 2015, what a moment that was. But you have the dynamic of the win over the Packers, which was the best moment of the year for the Bears on the field, followed by the loss of the 49ers 10 days later, being maybe the lowest point for this team. And you look at those as real benchmarks for the most important moments about where this franchise is. There's enough talent and coaching to get a win that no one expected, but still not nearly enough talent to get a win that they needed, that they should have gotten.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, it kind of epitomizes the season for the Bears and probably any, rebuilding young football team that you're not able to sustain the super highs, obviously beating Green Bay at Lambeau, beating Rodgers for the first time there. Not exactly sustainable, but at the same time, like you just said, and it gets back to the coaching, to not be too low either. You'd be able to go back and forth, if you will. Obviously, it was an ugly three-game stretch that they just came off of prior to the Tampa Bay game. But yeah, certainly no 10-day stretch, even 2-week stretch by NFL standards in the season kind of resonated more than those.
Two other stories on our list that I think the decision to not only commit to Jay Cutler, but then the fact that he played as well as he has all year, I think that's an important story for this season and then going into the future. And then, of course, signing Pernell McPhee, and then what ensued with McPhee during the season in terms of his injury, but he was also a vocal leader of the defense and all that. And we're joined now by our closer, Hub Arkish. And Hub, we've been recapping our top 10 most important stories. And the one we haven't talked about, which we want your take on, is Ryan Pace trading Brandon Marshall. I think that move in March when it happened was such an interesting move for Ryan Pace, such an important move, an important story. And then you can even lump in there the decision to trade Jared Allen, the decision to trade John Bostic. But it all began that moment. He decided to trade Brandon Marshall. That was Ryan Pace saying, this is my team. And I think even though it was a long time ago, we could still call it one of the most important stories for the Bears in this calendar year.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a little more, though, than him saying, this is my team. This was him saying, this is absolutely necessary if I'm going to have a chance to succeed here. And I think anybody who was around last year, who spent time around that locker room, time around that team, and maybe more importantly, all of us who were in Bourbonnais that first week, those first couple of weeks, and had guys, some coming up to me, others me going up to, and one after another saying, it's just so much better here, and it was without saying it. Every one of them clearly had Marshall on their mind. They also had Trestman on their mind. They had other things on their mind. But Brandon Marshall had to go. He was the definition of a cancer in the locker room. And forget that Pace made a statement about his team, that this young, inexperienced GM was able to identify it so quickly and move as quickly as he did to do what had to be done was essential to any potential success of this team.
And so few of Phil Emery's moves are even still with the team. And we talked about, obviously, Marshall and Allen and Bostic and Brock Vereen. You can go on, and we'll see how many are still here next year. But look, we've always talked about this on this podcast, on ChicagoFootball.com. No one's doubting what a fantastic player Brandon Marshall is, and he might make the playoffs for the first time in his career with the New York Jets. But that was a move that had to be made, and it was a big story. So again, you can read more detail about those top 10 stories. We collaborate with the guys at the Sun-Times. You can see it in your Thursday Sun-Times, Daily Herald, and Northwest Herald. And Hub, before we talk preview the Lions, player to watch, game picks. I want your take on something Arthur and I talked about earlier, because you've been on the radio for a few more years than we have, and you hear from Bears fans a lot about this whole idea that they want these teams to tank. You know, they want a better draft pick. And Arthur and I already talked earlier that the NFL is not the NBA. It's not Major League Baseball. These guys aren't going to do it. And we understand why fans might prefer the Bears lose on Sunday for a better draft pick. But you've heard this for so long on the airwaves and from callers and listeners and Bears fans. What do you respond to that when people would just prefer the Bears just lose to get the better pick?
Well, the first thing you have to realize is that a lot of radio marketing studies have been done, and in any given week, month, or year, it's less than 1% of the listeners who actually pick up the phone and call the station. So, and I'm not saying that that makes them wrong or not intelligent or anything like that. I'm just saying it's a really tiny minority, and the reality is it's just dumb. It's just you don't do it. You don't think about it. You cannot play. There are a lot of things that separate professional football from the other three major sports. But the big one, not so much hockey, but obviously baseball and basketball, is the physical, complete commitment, violent nature to it. And you don't send professional football players out on the field to lose. You cannot do it, okay? You talk about culture change and what you're trying to create amongst your players. To tell guys to lose, you will create a locker room full of 53 guys who never want to play for you again. You've got, 0-12, 0-13 teams that are still killing themselves as much week 13, week 14 as they were week 1. But more than that, there's a practical reason you don't do it. Having a higher pick guarantees you nothing. I mean, let's go get a higher pick and maybe we'll get Tim Couch or Ryan Leaf or
Cade McNally.
Yeah, or in Bears experience, Cedric Benson. I mean, it doesn't matter who it is. I mean, and actually Arthur pointed this out to me a couple weeks ago because I hadn't really thought about it. I just wasn't looking. Somebody asked me on the air, who's the defensive rookie of the year? Because I hadn't thought about it, I just threw out, well, I know Trent Williams is playing really well. And he texted me, what about Marcus Peters? Well, Marcus Peters is the defensive rookie of the year, and I believe he was the 17th pick in the first round.
Yeah, somewhere.
Maybe even a little bit later. I mean, there's no reason to do it. It doesn't make any sense. You know, everybody's got Chris Bryant disease and Chicago Cubs disease, but let's talk about that. If the Houston Astros aren't dumb enough to draft Apple, who's the pitcher, right-handed pitcher that they've since traded ahead of Chris Bryant, you don't get him anyway. So, it's in another sport, where player acquisition is different, I guess I don't believe it for any sport, to be honest with you, but you can at least make the argument in the NBA. Obviously, the Cubs are making the argument in town for baseball, but in the National Football League, it's just a bad idea every way you look at it.
6-10, 7-9, not that much difference, especially when you look at that draft pick. So don't freak out if the Bears win and get the 17th pick as opposed to the 11th or 12th pick. All right, last time we do it this season, player to watch, Bears versus Lions. Arthur, the last game at Soldier Field for this season, who are you going to be keeping an eye on?
And maybe the last game at Soldier Field for Matt Forte, it may be too obvious, but I think the end is probably near in a Bears uniform. I'm not saying I agree with it, but I think that's what's going to wind up happening. So he's a class act. I hope he gets the warmest ovation possible, and I hope he has a huge game, assuming the back cooperates and he can go out there against a tough defense and play well.
Yep.
I'm going to go with two guys because I can't separate them, and it would be three, except I already know Jonathan Anderson's not the answer at inside linebacker, but my focus is going to be on John Timu and Harold Jones-Quarte. I mean, these are two guys who got Bears fans excited last week in Tampa. I have very serious doubts about Timu because I don't think he's athletic enough to be a three or four down player. I think he did the one thing that he does well. He'll come up and hit you hard. He reads pretty well on the run. I don't think he's a complete player. Jones-Quarte, though, is interesting. I think get out of College, you find these guys once in a while. Athletically, he appears to have what it takes. He's a little smaller than I would like, but based on what I saw in Tampa, I want to see more of that. And if he does it a second week in a row, I think he creates some real offseason possibilities for himself in terms of being part of the Bears' future plans.
There are a couple guys that signed these one-year prove-it deals, and one of them is Jarvis Jenkins. He's the guy I'll be watching. He was so good at the beginning of the season. He's still playing a lot. He's still out there. But if he wants to come back, I think he's got to, try to finish this season strong. And, Sam Macho, I don't think, has done enough to necessarily warrant coming back as a rotational linebacker, maybe special teams. But there are guys like that, maybe Tracy Porter, who had a good overall season the last few games, hasn't shown some of that playmaking ability. Another guy, these guys, this could all be all these guys' last jobs, time opportunities with the Bears. to show the Bears that they should be re-signed.
You know, Acho is really interesting because he was kind of the focus the first couple weeks in training camp, had a great preseason, and I love Sam. I mean, he's a great guy in the locker room. He's a great teammate. He's a guy you want around. But I think it's pretty clear right now that that's one of the most set positions on the defense. Your first trio is going to be Pernell McPhee and Lamar Houston and Willie Young. I mean, Willie Young is under contract for one more year at a very reasonable price, so nothing's going to change there. You're probably only going to carry four. You want the fourth one to be a youngster. It's not going to be a guy like Acho who's a career journeyman. So unless they think about moving him inside, I'd be surprised if Acho's back.
Yeah, I would too. That's why I guess more so keep an eye on Jenkins because he's, you know, that's another huge position of need. We'll see if he factors in that as well. All right, guys, quick programming note. We've been posting this every Tuesday night during the season. In the postseason, we'll probably do, you know, a couple a month, but they'll vary a little bit, especially as our schedules vary and the Bears vary in terms of when they want to talk to us about things.
Why, you're going to be busier in the postseason? That's the first I heard of that. I think you should do one every day in the postseason. No, I'm just giving you a hard time.
Hub's been in this business a while, and probably I imagine your favorite question. So what do you do when the season's over?
Mm-hmm.
People think that we just go on a 6.5 month vacation.
Yeah, the season is usually over March 24th through the 27th and sometimes June 3rd through the 6th. That's about it.
Yeah.
That's the window.
Late July is okay, right before training camp. So all right, so we're going to make our game picks. I'm also going to ask you guys if you have one, a New Year's resolution for 2016. If you don't have one, you don't have to give it. But so New Year's resolution and your pick for Bears Lions is to wrap up the final podcast of 2015. Executive producer Dan Mott.
Well, guys, in order for me to go with what I had predicted in the beginning of the season, which was the Bears going 6-10, the Bears need to lose on Sunday. I actually have the Lions winning 24-21. I know Bears fans are probably sick of me picking against the Bears, but it is what it is. My resolution this year is just going to be to shoot at least one of the shorts that I've written over the past couple of years. I've written some short film stuff, and I'm hoping to get one of those shot this year, so we'll see.
All right, well, we'd like to see that. All right, John Sally.
Your resolution's a lot better than mine. Mine is just to complain less, but for a game prediction, I think the Bears actually do get a home win here. I think Bears 27, Lions 24.
All right, Arthur, what about you?
I also think the Bears are going to get a home win, their second one, and I think there's something to be said for it. Again, they've already shown a one-game improvement, but it would be something to not finish in last place again and to get a second division win after everything that happened last year. So I'll say 24-21 Bears, and my New Year's resolution, it's pretty lame, but I need to clean my basement. I've been in my house now for 18 months. It is scary down there, and I promised my wife as soon as the season ended I would I'd do something about it. So I'm gonna make good on that deal.
You know, I didn't realize Mott and I were on the same page at the end of August. I also picked the Bears to go 6-10. I did, you know, kind of cop out and say, but if everything went right, they could be 7-9. Obviously, everything has not gone right, but it also wouldn't be right if I got my first prediction of the year correct. So I'm taking the Bears in this one. I think that Fox and Pace, a lot of these players, they've checked a lot of things off the list, so to speak. I mean, there's a lot more to do, but in terms of first-year rebuilding hopes, they've gotten a lot right. One thing that would be really painful would be spending an offseason thinking how we went 1-7 at home. And I don't think that, you know, 2-6 is that much better, but it's the last one you got to crack at, and you want to send the hometown folks home feeling good. I never take road teams playing for nothing week 17, even though the Lions are 5-2 in their last seven. I like the Bears' chances in this one. I'd feel better if I thought Alshon Jeffrey was going to play, and he's probably not. But I think I picked it Bears 26, Lions 24.
Do you have a New Year's resolution?
Yeah, I'm going to finally train one of our three dogs.
All right.
Only one of them, though. I can't have three trained dogs in the house.
Well, 2017, you can move on to the second dog and go from there one step at a time. So I guess I picked 8-8 back in May, and the Bears only have one game left. And so they can't go 8-8. I actually picked the Lions in this one. A weird score. I think I said 32-30 or 32-29 because I like those funky scores. It's really hard for me to even think about the Bears being 1-7 Soldier Field, but the Lions are really rolling, and I think that offense is going to be too difficult for the Bears, so we'll see. And plus, my picks are wrong every week anyways. I'm even getting flack from my mother's friends who open the Sun-Times or Daily Herald or Northwest Herald and see it. My mom texted me after the Bears-Bucks game, and she said, nice win for the Bears, but you got another pick wrong.
You know, I finally figured out why Spencer has that look on his face on Arthur's avatar. It's Kevin's pick is what we finish
there
with.
There you go. That's probably it.
Now, of course, it's great on radio and internet because nobody can see the kid's face, but he's a little horrified in the picture.
Well, Spencer's an adorable baby, Arthur. Don't let.
I thought you guys were going to say because you hear him crying and yelping for his father in the background, and that had something to do with the face. So.
Maybe he was yelping. Yeah. His father hasn't picked the Bears games well either this year.
Yeah, we thought he was yelping because he knew Dad was almost done with work and coming. So that's a.
Yeah, I'm not going there. Good for Spencer. I'll be there shortly, son.
All right, folks, and Spencer Bowie, who's, of course, listening with Arthur. That'll do it for this edition of the ChicagoFootball.com Bears podcast. I want to thank you for listening. Go ahead and subscribe on iTunes. Give us a 5-star rating while you're at it. And head to ChicagoFootball.com for all the latest Bears news and analysis. I want to thank our sponsor, your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. The Silverado is ready when you are. Get a head start on the new year with special offers and check out all the Chevy truck selections at ChevyDriveChicago.com today. Drive what Dan Hampton drives. For our guest on the podcast today, Josh Katzenstein of the Detroit News, executive producer Dan Mott, associate producer John Sally, our closer Hub Arkish, and my co-host Arthur Arkish, I'm Kevin Fishbane, wishing all of you a safe, happy, and healthy new year. We will talk to you in 2016.